It is said that bunnies have big ears, fuzzy cotton ball tails, and a love of the carrot. Yes, I suppose. But do bunnies also have a love of dance, music, travel, the ability to overcome obstacles, no matter how dangerous? We'll smile. We know such a bunny, don't we? He is Bugs Bunny, and this is the 48-hour celebration of his life. June Bugs, this is a bunny's life. Starts Friday, June 4th at 9 p.m.
Well, stupid, are you ready?
Okay, Smokey, roll 'em. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, a Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your host, Mark Halem, joined by...
And I'm Jordan Schmidt, and welcome to June Bugs. That's right, we are spending the entire month of June talking solely about Bugs Bunny shorts. Now, I know what you're thinking. How is that different from what we usually do? Well, we've taken a little break from Bugs for a little while, so...
Yeah, you know, we haven't really covered Bugs lately. I don't believe we've covered Bugs in the last. I'm going to look it up because I have the document open.
It's been a bit, yeah.
I mean, we did the one Bugs cartoon in our World War II episode. I'd say it's been about... Since our Rocky episode, I think.
Wow.
I think if you had to say... Our second one, by the way. I think since our second Rocky episode, because that one had two Bug shorts in it. So, definitely the most since then. And, that's the theme this month.
Yeah.
It's Bugs Bunny cartoons. Any Bugs Bunny cartoons that we can legally cover.
That we haven't done before. And so there's a lot of good cuts that we've been meaning to do. That like haven't fit themes that people have asked us to do, and I think one really big one is in this episode that we're doing today. And I think you're all really gonna have some thoughts on my opinions on that one. But yeah, no, and we picked some other various ones that we've been meaning to do or we'd mentioned before that we thought would make good episodes. So we are starting with the first of those today. It is the beginning of June, and we have more episodes running until the end of the month. Solely based off of Bugs cartoons, and we hope you guys enjoy that month-long direction of the podcast.
All right, so the shorts we're covering this week are Hair Lift, The Wind-Blown Hair, and Easter Yeggs.
Yes, finally we are doing Easter Yeggs, folks.
I know what you're thinking. Isn't it kind of silly that you're covering an Easter short in June?
Yes.
Keep a note on that. Keep a pin in that. We're going to come back to that later. But
again, if we ever had to do an Easter episode that wasn't Bugs Daffy Duck's Easter Extravaganza sponsored by McDonald's, then that would have been in that one. But no, we're doing it here. But before that one, we have some other ones that I have less controversial opinions on. We start with Hair Lift. It came out on December 20th, 1952.
Yes.
You can do with this what you will in the final edit. Hair Lift, without spoiling it too much, is a short about a giant plane that goes hairwire and nearly crashes. But on this day in 1952...
Is it the Hindenburg?
No.
Is it the Hindenburg disaster?
It's not the Hindenburg, but on this day in 1952, United States Air Force C-124 crashes and burns in Moses Lake, Washington, killing 87 people. You have your cartoon where it's Bugs and Sam in a giant plane zooming about, crashing into things, nearly crashing into other things, all over the place. And in real life, on the day that's released, you have an actual plane wreck with actual casualties. Now, I don't think that Friz Freleng and Warren Foster dabbled in the occult and, you know, saw the future to see what unmistakable calamity would befall the world on this day, but you have to think, even if you aren't a very superstitious or cowardly lot, that that's at least a little funny. I think it's extremely funny. I'm not the kind of person that laughs at a funeral or plane crashes in that matter. But the fact that this happened on the day of a Bugs Bunny short involving a plane that doesn't exactly crash, but does pretty much everything but crash, that is fucking hysterical.
What kills me, what absolutely kills me, besides being on a plane that crashes, I hope it doesn't come to bite me in the ass later, is, were they still doing newsreels in the 50s or before?
I don't know. I do not know.
Could you imagine?
Breaking news, a dying crash outside of Washington.
87 dead. A horrible tragedy. Oh, this one about hairlift. Oh, no.
Oh, God. Don't worry. Warner Brothers is now making a cartoon where Bugs Bunny gets shot at on a golf course in the Philippines, but that won't come true either.
No.
Come back here, you wabbit. So hair lift.
That has to go in the final edit.
Oh, I'm glad. I didn't know. Because sometimes when major calamities befall people, you cut it. Like, do with this what you will. But there's an entire running gag we had throughout like our mid-60s and 70s involving a wrestler that died in a fire that will never see the light of day. And maybe this mention might not even see the light of day. But there's things where I'm not sure if Mark will put it in. It's in the reel, yes, but will it ever see the light of day? To this day, whenever I fuck up a line, I'll literally go, I die in a fire. So, and that's why. Okay. But yeah, no, I wasn't sure. Hairlift, Freeling, Foster. We discussed those two and their clairvoyancy. We've covered parts of Hairlift on two occasions on this podcast. Once as part of the Bugs Bunny mystery special, not sponsored by McDonald's, though you never know.
Which, listen, if you don't remember it being the Bugs Bunny mystery special, it's okay. Neither do we. Nobody remembers the Bugs Bunny mystery special, and we covered it.
Yeah, we spent maybe like 10 minutes actually talking about things that happen in that special, and the rest of it just talking about random bullshit. But yeah, no, it shows up in also in Devil's Feud Cake, which we talked about in our Hell episode, I believe. And that one we were also critical of because that one and I had to look at the Hairlift for that one, but Devil's Feud Cake, Mel Blanc had to re-record dialogue as Bugs and Sam to make sure it fit into that cartoon. And so a lot of it sounds really rushed.
Where like it was like sped up and shit, and it was just the most strangest like I think we're like, oh well, was this after his car accident? So we had to deal with that. Maybe I don't know, but yeah.
But yeah, no, we've covered this before.
It's a cartoon that kept escaping us, so now it's like. First on the docket.
Let's go. Finally, Hairlift. Let's do this. Properly. It's about time. We begin with the setup that, you know, oh, we're going to premiere this new gigantic plane. You know, a passenger plane that has just been built and is this marvel of aerodynamics and technology. And the first minute of this, because the whole thing is that they've landed the plane and are fueling it right over Bugs' rabbit hole. And so Bugs is disturbed by its existence and goes up and looks around. And the first minute of this, where it's just Bugs in the plane by himself, it isn't great because it's a typical Bugs hole gag. He's sort of wandering around the plane, making observations to himself. You know, until he has somebody like Yosemite Sam to work off of, there's not a lot of funny things happening yet. Which is fine. But but then Sam does show up because the whole thing here, this is still early Sam. This is still first few appearances Sam, because he's still very much Cowboy Sam. He's not yet into his amorphous sort of any man, any crook kind of persona quite yet. But he's just robbed a bank, and we've talked about him just sort of rubbing out the number of dollars they have on the window of the bank. Also, his first line in this is great.
And keep reaching for the ceiling till you reach it.
The whole thing is that Sam has just robbed a bank and is now going to hijack this giant plane, which Bugs is literally fooling around and playing pilot in the front driver's seat of. And so he's like, all right, fine. Take me, take me up in the air. Get me out of here. And Bugs is like, but I'm not a pilot. And Sam's like, no, take me up here. And Bugs, again, shrugs at us, sort of has to figure out how to fly a plane. And that's our setup. And I do like that setup.
Yeah, I love just the visual of Bugs going, like, how do I start this scene? A bunch of clocks and levers and everything on there. It's like, this random button.
Yes.
And it turns out it works. And I love the animation on the cars, because it doesn't fly up yet. Just the animation of the cars, like, oh shit, as they travel around as the plane is driving down the road. I love that. Just like, personality to cars.
I like that. There's little bits here. There's those. There's the building it's about to crash into that literally zips up from. And also just Sam being yanked to the back of the plane and seeing the earth in the rear view or whatever. Again, it's just really funny plane physics stuff. I got a kick out of him coming back into the cockpit and going, it's not even the full line of this, it amuses me. Just the beginning of this of, why are you crazy engine pilot?
I have your license revoked.
So here we get the main crux of this cartoon, which is Bugs taking the power back from Sam and fucking with him. Because the whole thing is that Sam realizes that Bugs is trying to learn how to fly by using a sort of a how to fly book. The whole thing is that, like, you know, it's Bugs just pulling switches willy-nilly, and Sam is like just becoming very just panicking, going, read faster, rabbit. And again, the powers in Bugs' hands. I love the line he has here. I refuse to look up any more reference because you talked mean to me. Sam just has an, oh, no!
I love that so much. Bugs is so petty throughout this short.
So petty.
And it's fantastic. It's pure Bugs energy throughout this cartoon. It just keeps going from here.
Yeah.
like Sam just like, okay, fine, I'm sorry. This is Pugs with sugar. Like, no, not with sugar. Ooh.
Yeah. And again,
it just starts playing jacks.
It's great. He's playing jacks. Again, he's waiting for Bugs forgive him or whatever. And then Sam is just literally playing with jacks, waiting frustratedly as the plane begins to hurtle back down towards the plane. There's one or two moments of reused animation in this, like the little shot of Sam looking out in the front of the plane is reused, and there's another shot of him flying to the back of the plane that's reused. It's fine, if at least the gag works pretty good. Again, Sam just panicking because of how much Bugs is screwing with him. I love that. Is next the greatest Bugs gag in the history of Bugs gags?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes. Where, so Bugs just hits a switch and it goes back up. He's like, yeah, see, easy. So Sam just comes back up saying, okay, give me the book, Varmint, give me the book. Just in flawless energy, Bugs going, okay, drops the book, kicks it. But Sam's like, no, runs out, book flies out of the airplane. Sam falls out of the airplane, guts the book, looks down, sees the airplane, runs back.
And then runs back in, slips on a banana peel, and falls immediately back out.
It's perfect.
Oh my God.
Perfect.
The timing gag is incredible.
Absolute perfect.
And then literally right after that, Sam being rushed back out the plane, you hear a knock, knock, knock. I wonder who that could be. And then Sam's clinging onto the door for dear life and Bugs slams it like he's a traveling salesman. That, I think, is the strongest 30 seconds in the entire cartoon and is enough to gain a lot of ground from just the first minute or so of trying to build up the concept. Like, that bit of gag work is incredible.
It is. It is.
But yeah, we have the bomb release gag, which is kind of an easy fall. Where, you know, it's like, you know, I've got you now, and he's standing over a little bomb release trap door, and Bugs pulls it, and he falls out. And something about Sam's reaction and him just sort of clawing back onto the plane up through the air is pretty silly. And I think here is where you can literally see Frizz and Warren go, well, there's a minute left in the cartoon. We should probably start, you know, going towards an ending. And so that's why Bugs literally yanks the steering wheel out of the plane. It's like, all right, come on, give me the steering wheel. Okay. Yeah. So, okay, now the plane has to crash. Now they have to sort of go towards an ending. And...
yeah, and Bugs just pure chaos throughout this.
Oh, my God, yes.
And so after that bit, we then get a gag that even in the mystery special, I remember us going, okay, this is a really good gag, we'll give it that, is the robot pilot.
Oh, I love that. We loved it then, we love it now.
Just know, here's a robot pilot, a robot comes out, takes a parachute, flies out the plane.
Perfect.
Oh, man.
And then we have some easier endings. Like, okay, you know, Sam takes the last parachute and takes the money and jumps out of the plane and then lands perfectly in a police car. I do like his little, as he realizes that they've got him, as the parachute just sort of drapes all over them. You just hear him go,
ooh,
which is always funny. And then Bugs is able to break the plane before it actually crashes into anything. And it just sort of breaks in midair, which is a great cartoon detail. So... yeah, this one isn't perfect, and its use in many Freeling projects has dulled it a bit for me. The core of this one, however, is some excellent Bugs Sam dynamic work, some really funny gags, some great things they do with the two of them, with Bugs just completely, like, being as chaotic as humanly possible and destroying things just so Sam can lose. I liked all that. I liked the middle bit, the gag mentality there. This works more often than it does for me, and it outdoes its slow start by just being really funny towards the middle.
Yeah, this is a really good Bugs showcase. The pure, I don't care, I'll kill us both nature that's in this. It's so chaotic, yet perfectly fits the character. Sam is great in this as well with his patience about saying sorry.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
Just the pure pettiness of Bugs. Just, yeah, no, we're going to die, but if you don't say I'm sorry, I'm just going to have us both crash in this plane.
That's great. I love whenever they can really deal with not only just, like, you know, gag things, but the interpersonal, like, detail. Like, yeah, so it takes a good writer.
The psychological.
Yeah, psychological. It takes a good writer to do talking stuff well, and that's at least talking stuff that's handled well because it's simple. It's like just Bugs screwing with him and making him feel bad and having fun with that. And sometimes that's all you need. You don't need to be too talky or too ridiculous or any of that. You just need to... you know, have very simple dynamics and very simple struggles. And that's what makes this work as well as it did. So I give this one a 4 out of 5.
I'm also giving it a 4 out of 5 animals.
Yeah. Cool.
Now let's never watch this cartoon again.
Yes, please. I mean, no, it's not bad. It's not like, oh, yeah, I'm never going to watch it again. But yeah, no,
it's
no,
not.
But we don't need to cover it on the podcast ever again.
So the next short we got here is The Wind Blown Hair.
Yeah.
It came out on August 27th, 1949. Regards what happened on that day, Jeff Cook, American country music guitarist, singer, and fiddler. He played on Alabama's Mountain Music.
Okay.
Yeah. Know the work of Alabama, but yeah, you know, I'm in a hurry, guys, them. I was born on that day on Fort Payne, Alabama. Huh. That, of course he did.
Yeah.
He's in a group called Alabama.
If he wasn't born in Alabama, they have a strict no other 49 states rule in Alabama. If you even, like, spent more than, like, a minute in another state, they're like, no, no Alabama for you. You get out of there. You
exactly,
know.
Exactly. All right. So this short was directed by Robert McKimson, written by Warren Foster. Are all three of these written by Warren Foster?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay. It's another accidental Warren Foster episode.
Bugs,
I think
we
did this before, previously. Exactly. Exactly. There's the title.
Bugs by Warren. It's filmed in front of a live studio audience.
Da, 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 da.
No, that's Alabama again.
With special guest star, Alabama.
Because the other 49 states couldn't make it.
Because the other 49 states said hell no.
But that's a big move to have your Looney Tunes talk show, to have the entire state of Alabama in the audience. That'd be great. Anyone in here from New York? Pin drops. Anyone in here from California? and just do the other 47 and just like, no, just grade on them. Like, yeah, New Mexico, Louisiana. And there's just the people in the audience going, God damn, he's going to get to it eventually, I hope. There's only 23 states after all.
And just for fun, don't you guys see what percentage of our audience we just pissed off here?
Oh, no. 100.
Less than 1%. We'll be fine.
Okay, less than 1%. That's their testing. That's the number of people in Alabama that get A's on SATs as well. So, although the joke is on me because you can't get an A on the SATs, you have to get a 2400. Exactly. So now I'm the fucking dumbass.
Exactly. I mean, people in Alabama even count the 2400.
One, two. Hey, look, a cheeseburger.
Hey, that's me every day.
To be fair, okay, yeah, me too.
So, all right. So, all
right.
The Wind Blown Hair is a send-up of the Three Little Pigs story. It wasn't in our episode about the Three Little Pigs because we really want to talk about Three Little Pops, and we kind of just blew by this cartoon. So, yes. Here we go. The Wind Blown Hair. So, first thing that I don't know if I like it or not, but these pigs from the get-go are assholes.
Yes.
Right up front. Because they're reading the story and it's just,
well, there it is in black and white. The wolf is going to blow both your houses down.
Hey, we better sell our house before the wolf comes.
Yeah, let's find a sucker to buy and we can all live in my brick house.
All for one and one for all.
And they have this group laugh that I just wrote down here. The laugh these pigs have just scream executive to me. Like, if you're an executive at some corrupt studio who's not doing a good job right now, what I'm saying is, I'm pretty sure David Zaslav laughs like this.
Yeah. Oh, what's that? The writers want to be paid?
We just set someone up to buy our houses. So they set up this big elaborate sale, and Bugs Bunny is just walking through like, I could go for a house. You know, I'm sick and tired of the hole that I live in. Which, according to some cartoons, is either just a bed or it's a full-blown kitchenette.
Yeah. It depends on the humorous value. Yeah.
So eventually, you know, he meets with the pig, and the pig is like, okay, listen, I'll give it to you for $10. I do love the line from Bugs of, $10? Yeah, it's pretty inflated, but all right. Hey, that joke still holds up today.
Yeah. Yeah, you know.
Inflation.
Yeah. I'd kill to have a whole house for $10 anyway, you know. $10 is probably like enough to pay for like 1 minute of water. I don't know. But yeah, no. But we set up that, like, you know, okay, you know, obviously, you know, that Bugs is being set up by the pigs, you know, and again, like, I like the fact that they set up the pigs have read the Three Little Pigs and know the wolf is going to blow down the houses of straw and sticks. So that's why they're selling them. And again, I like that the wolf also uses the Three Little Pigs as a guideline, literally reading the fairy tale book and trying to nail his blow your house down line as he's going up there, which also feels very early Looney Tunes.
It does. It's very early 40s aesthetic, which is really good.
To contrast with an earlier point we made a couple weeks ago about McKimson cartoons, this one actually animates energetically against the dialogue instead of just sort of taking educated guesses. These actually have good animators in this. It's the early days of McKimson unit because it's still his brother Charles, probably still Richard Bickenbach, those kind of people. They just, you know, they make sure there's still energy when the wolf is trying to gesticulate and try and get this line down. And then there's plenty of other instances in this cartoon where they also let people be energetic. But it's not just about, like, it's not like Mel's being left out to dry, like in Quackshot.
Yeah, no. Mel has very good delivery as the wolf. No, you know, it's funny you say that about the energy, because one of the qualms I have about the short is, we get to our setup of the conflict between the wolf and Bugs. The way they kind of execute that, it's very kind of da-da-da-da-da-da. It's very, I guess, teleplayed out. just like, oh, he's gonna blow on the door, and then Bugs gonna be like, now wait a minute, and then he blows down the hay, and Bugs is like, well, that sucks. Oh, look, I'm at this again.
It's like this for a reason. It's a setup portion.
I feel the setup coming down a little bit better.
You say this is sort of like, this opening bit is sort of like, you know, like going through the motions. I think there are some fun details in here. I like that when the wolf is at the second house, he forgets his line, like, I'm going to huff and I'll puff and, oh yeah! it's not a new joke, but it's the timing that gets me.
So eventually Bugs is like, okay, well, now I have to deal with this wolf character. And I do like just the wolf looking at the book going, okay, at the brick house, I can't go there. As we reveal that Bugs has dressed up as Little Red Riding Hood.
Yes.
skipping along.
I've always remembered Bugs singing The Rabbit in Red to himself in this one for some reason. I didn't watch this one very often on the Golden Collections drink. But I do remember especially this portion and little bits of this one. I also love, as Bugs passes the wolf is like, well, who are you? And Bugs just flips a couple pages forward in the Hevery Tale book and goes, read this.
And I love this bit so much because the joke is the wolf has to read the story very fast. So that means Mel has to read the story very fast. Yes. You have to speed it up. What I love is, you know, it's like oh, the Little Riding Hood says, and then Mel does the wolf doing a feminine voice. It's also sped up.
Yes, he does all the voices.
One day, Red Riding Hood was going through the woods with a basket for her grandmother when she met a wolf. The wolf said, "Hello, Red Riding Hood, where are you going?" Red Riding Hood said, "I'm going to my grandmother's." The wolf took a shortcut to the grandmother's house and ate the grandmother up and put on her nightdress and got into the grandmother's bed. When Red Riding Hood came to the door, she knocked and the wolf said in the grandmother's voice, "Come in, Red Riding Hood. What did you bring me?" Red Riding Hood said, "Oh, what big eyes you have, Grandma."
"Hey, I'm late. I didn't even take care of Grandma yet."
Well, I love the moment the speeding up stops. It's like, Red Riding Hood, "Hey, I'm late!" And he just runs off.
"Hey, wait a minute. I killed Grandma."
So good. Like, and that speed leading into the shortcut to Grandma's house gag, complete with him just literally slamming into the front door because it's right there. That's great.
And he just runs into Grandma's house and he's like, "Okay, Grandma, get out of here. Go. And Grandma's like so confused, like, "Aren't you going to eat me?" No, go. "Get out of here. Here's your clothing. I love that she runs out of fear and terror, not because a wolf is there, but because she's getting kicked out of her house.
Yeah. just confused, huh?
Never has a person been more confused as to why they haven't been eaten than this grandma.
Like, all right, sure.
I guess I live today. Okay.
Sure, you know, all right. I'll have a Coke. Yeah. The animation during this sequence where Bugs screws with the wolf and they sort of realize they're both in costume at Grandma's house. The speed of it, I love the wolf dragging Bugs over at high speed and going, "Oh, yeah!" And just pulling each other and just ripping. Again, this is where the McKimson unit actually did really good energetic animation. And thank God.
Exactly. And what I loved is, because we've seen Red Riding spoofs before with Looney Tunes, what I love is when Bugs comes in and you're like, "Oh, Grant, what big eyes you have." Just the wolf going,
"What big eyes you got, Grandma?"
"All the better to..."
"Ow!" "And what big ears you got, Granny?" "And what big teeth you got, kiddo?"
Oh, yeah. Love that moment. So then they start chasing each other, and then we get this bit that they go to a dark space. So I thought, don't go down there.
It's dark. That's what I thought, too.
But no, instead we do it's funny. However, I couldn't help but thinking, this is a Freeling gag. What's it doing in a McKimson cartoon?
Well, if only a writer that worked a lot with Freeling was writing this cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe it's not a Freeling gag. Maybe it's a Warren Foster gag.
But yeah, I was like, this line is kind of eh. Yeah. And then just because the whole thing is, you know, the it's dark, but it's light on. Walk down the stairs, lights turn off, and then the camera's up the stairs, down the stairs, all that.
Click!
And I love just the wolf. Yeah. That's what sold it for me. It was just the wolf's coming down and Bugs just says click and I just throw him off. Love that.
Very funny. Yeah. But yeah, and even after that, we just get all these, like, Like, I love Bugs getting on the getaway bicycle and us slowly being revealed that it's a tandem bicycle that the wolf is also on. That's so good. And then eventually, I don't know if there, I forget if there's any other gag in between this, but eventually Bugs makes a realization that it's going to take the Democratic Party another 3 decades at this fucking rate, which is, oh, I get it. It's those pigs.
Yeah, exactly.
And if this is the last episode, the FBI did not think kindly of those thoughts.
So they go to the brick house. Ow. And yeah, as you know, the man's like, oh, that stupid rabbit, we really got him good. And he just goes to the wolf like, okay, blow the house down. And just the wolf going, but the book said, and I just love,
I can't blow the brick house down. It says so in the book. This is just a better bear's tale, because it's like, well, this happens in the book. And like,
yes.
You know, they're having fun with it, thank God.
Somebody's like, okay, fine. I'll blow the house down. It does the shtick. And sure enough, it works. It gets blown the fuck up. And just the reveal to the wolf, like, I did it? The pigs. He did it? We did it.
Him of the fuse box, yeah. I absolutely love that ending. Because again, it makes the wolf think he's done it. It gives the wolf self-esteem and makes him think that he can... He is more stronger than what the books have said about what he's capable of doing in this fairy tale. And with a little dynamite, you know, not everything that's written is true. So I kind of love that. And
a little dynamite goes a long way.
Yeah.
A very nice Bugs and Three Pigs short. Personally, I prefer his work with bears. Those are a little bit better. But the wolf character was a lot of fun. I do feel at times that if it kind of felt like a lesser Freeling effort, which isn't saying it's bad, but, you know, it's still good. It still has a lot of really good moments in here that I really enjoyed.
Well, I did not expect to love this one as much as I did on account of it being a McKimson short I didn't rewatch very often as a kid. But I love this as a revisionist fairy tale short. I love Bugs' energy. I love the animation of the energy of the animation. I love this friggin' wolf that's just trying to get it right and trying to both go according to the book and defy what the book says. I love the gag work in the middle when it was just him, Bugs and the wolf in Grandma's house. A lot of little things just from a Warren Foster standpoint, I think, lifted this one. And yes, okay, the McKimson-ness of it all threatens to upend it, but it feels... one of the less McKimson-y McKimson shorts, and I mean that as a compliment. I mean, yes, even though, it takes place in a suburban house for a couple of scenes, it's not like, you know, it's not like
but
other...
It's, yeah. But it's done in a way that makes sense.
Yes,
you know,
it is.
Because there are some McKimson shorts where, like in, I believe, in one of the Devon Duck cartoons.
Yeah.
It just covered it. In the '40s, that one where like the swamp was very nicely done, really nicely animated, and then it just takes a sharp turn to it's in a house now, where it's just going, okay, we're going to do typical house gags here.
Yeah.
At least with this, with the Red Riding Hood motif, it does lead itself to more, much more entertaining and much more funny gags than you would typically get out of a McKimson outing. All right, so I'm going to give this short 3.5 out of 5 anvils.
And I'm giving it 4.5 out of 5 anvils because I really liked it. And now to piss off the entire Looney Tunes community. As if we haven't already done it in this episode. It's Easter eggs. You guys like this one. You guys really like this one. It's Easter eggs.
It's brought up every Easter.
Yes, it is.
Every Easter on Twitter and social media, I see, you know, people posting the gif of Bugs skipping with the Easter egg or something.
Early clips of the dead end kid or whatever, you know. So people really like this one. I have tried to keep this in mind. It's very difficult. I'm dying of fire. See? This one came out on June 20. Wait a fucking minute. June 28th, 1947. Okay. I don't know a lot about how holidays are, have been, used to be, or anything. But the whole thing is that Easter usually falls somewhere between late March and early April. Sometimes it's late April. Sometimes it can even be early March. Never, unless there's something that happened one time that I am not aware of, never has Easter fallen in the month of June or even after spring is over. So did Warner Brothers make an Easter cartoon and then not get it out until June? At least it's not a Christmas short. Happy June! Merry Christmas!
I can confirm it has never once fallen in June.
Oh, thank you. Is that a question where Google just asks, what the fuck? No.
No. Now, you see, Jordan, there's an entire Wikipedia article called, and I quote, "List of dates for Easter." I typed in June, and nothing showed up. So, no, it never fell in June. Because why the fuck would it? It goes against the entire aesthetic of the holiday. Have you ever tried painting eggs in the hot summer sun? It sucks.
You should probably be painting them indoors.
You ever try to sneeze for candy in the grass on a hot summer's day? It's terrible.
The chocolate's melted.
And melts into the grass. The insects die.
The Skittles get all in the ant holes.
Yeah. You killed Dave Foley and Woody Allen because of it.
Oh, poor Dave. Anyway, it's like you handed me that one on a silver platter. Did you find anything of note for June 28th, 1947? Because I fucking couldn't.
Chibaba, Chibaba, My Bambino Go to Sleep by Perry Como hit number one of the Billboard bestsellers in stores record chart.
So nothing. Okay.
Yeah, nothing.
Warren Foster wrote this one as well. Robert McKimson directed it. A lot of people like this one. The other background.
Well, what's your history with the short, Jordan? Where'd you first saw it? I believe the Gone Collection.
Same.
I believe that this is on the first Gone Collection.
Yes, it is. Mistaken. I, even before I go into my thoughts on it now, I didn't watch this one very often on the original Golden Collection because I didn't like it very much. Also because, like, oh, it's an Easter short. When am I going to watch this other than, like, on Easter or whatever? But also, like, and I'll get into it when we get into it, but there's elements of this that I don't love, and that also some of the McKimson-ness, but I didn't watch this one very often. And so when we joined the Looney Tunes community on Twitter and we saw so many people praising Easter Yeggs, I'm like, you're doing this on this one? Then? Okay, fine. Sure. But, you know, it's not really my cup of tea.
So for the comments section, which I'm sure there's going to be comments for this episode, hope you didn't expect Jordan to love this one.
I don't.
You can imagine, like we get to the comments section and are like, I can't believe you guys are finally covering this lovely short. I bet you're both going to have such wonderful things to say about it.
Yeah. Well, what's your thoughts on it before you rewatch it for this?
I remember the, you know what? I'll say this. I remember the first 3 to 4 minutes of this cartoon.
Same.
Up to when Elmer shows up. I completely forgot Elmer Fudd's in this cartoon.
Same.
I remember the kid. I remember the depressed Easter Bunny.
I remember Keep Smiling.
Everything. Yeah, Keep Smiling. Everything. And when I was doing the research, I was like, Easter eggs. It's like, this is a cartoon. In fact, Jordan, this is the first Bugs Elmer pairing to be directed by Robert McKimson. This is
yeah.
the first go at the characters.
To which I'm like, well, shit, Elmer's in this? That was me doing research. I'm like, Elmer's in this?
Yeah.
I forgot he was in this.
And fun fact, this is the 500th Looney Tunes cartoon ever made. Cartoon show released by Warner Brothers.
Cool.
Yeah.
Excellent.
This is the halfway point, people. This is halfway. This is our sticking point. Okay, from singing the bathtub to Easter eggs, which, boy, that's a lot of changes.
It really is. But, I mean, you're still in the 40s, so it's still very much close to a lot of the mentalities of sinking in the bathtub, but or closer to that than something like Marching Through Georgia or Nighty Night Bugs. But,
True.
So, this has a very simple setup. Bugs is doing his thing. He runs into the Easter Bunny. The Easter Bunny is really sad because he says that he's really hurt the soles of his feet and he can't really go on. So like, all right, could you take some houses for me? And the Easter Bunny says, you know, I dump this on some chump rabbit every year. I don't want to do my work. It's horrifying.
Yeah.
So that's at least, you know, it's at least a good setup.
I did like the line here, you know, I am the Easter Rabbit. I'm supposed to be happy and gay, but it turns out I'm into broads. Anyway, continue.
You know, I thought that and it felt like I should leave it alone, but you know, you can go for it, you know. But you have this initial visual of Bugs as the Easter Rabbit singing a song, which is already beloved, and you know, that's funny, you know, it's even when he's just doing it, genuinely. But we then go towards my first issue with this short, which is Bugs and the Dead End Kid. Now, I get what...
This is a very classic moment.
It is. And I get what McKimson and Foster are trying to do by saying not every kid is happy to see the Easter Bunny. Some kids are not in great areas and are bratty and, you know, are brought up to be, you know, sort of, you know, rough, tough assholes and shit. But the thing is that, you know, it's Bugs is basically victimized by this spoiled brat for a couple of minutes. And not even in a really funny way. Like, at the very least, 10 years later, they figured out how to do something like this in Baby Buggy Bunny. But it's a lot of unfunny stuff with this brat just sort of being rude and saying, you know, I want an Easter egg and smashing it in his face and complaining. And then, I mean, look, I laughed at, like, the three guys showing up with guns the second the kid starts complaining he's hurt. But, like, it's a lot of just, as I've said, Bugs doesn't always work when he's the victim. And you can't help but feel bad for Bugs and absolutely despise the fucking kid. And so this doesn't work for me, even though, yes, people like it.
I mean, I do gotta say, Mel's delivery of Bugs throughout the short, honestly, is fantastic. I do love his, they're fighting a dust cloud, and then it breaks. It just Bugs doing an almost Yosemite Sam. I enjoyed that, but yeah, the kid doesn't really get a comeuppance in this cartoon. He, in fact, he's used later as a weapon.
He is the comeuppance for someone else, which is odd. But yeah. He's just this bratty kid. And again, like the whole thing is like, you know, Bugs doesn't want to do this anymore. But hey, there's still 4 minutes left in the cartoon. Do another house, all right? And I did like Bugs spitefully singing the song as he heads to the second house. I don't know why I laughed so hard at the reveal not only of Elmer Fudd's house, which is Welcome Easter Rabbit, but him looking at us and going excitedly, I'm waiting for the Easter Rabbit. I love Elmer.
Ooh, I'm going to get some nice treats and ale with chocolate, and then I'm going to kill him.
Yeah, it's great. But yeah, you know, some of this is it's Elmer disguised as a child to try and fool Bugs.
He has no shame.
He doesn't.
He really has no shame in this.
No. But, you know, there's some easy gags here where it's him in Elmer's house, and it just turns into Bugs running from Elmer. Do you have any gags before the digging the hole gag?
No.
Okay.
Because nothing else happens.
Yeah, no, it's just a lot of running around and gags don't work, but I do like the gag where Elmer digs a hole in the ground to use as a trap for Bugs. And you see him like drown him out with a hose, and you just see Bugs come up on a raft that he's already prepared. We're lounging.
Wait, you missed the best line.
Oh.
As as Elmer's setting up the trap, he's wearing a hat, and he goes, and I quote, "I can't mess with my Dick Tracy hat."
That's the wrong Warren. This is a different Warren episode. You're thinking of that asshole that keeps going on Turner Classic Movies and snapping up the rice of Dick Tracy every 10 fucking years.
Yeah, but it's just like, listen, I don't know why Gappy reading Dick Tracy isn't as off-putting as Elmer just casually mentioning that he owns a Dick Tracy hat, but Dick Tracy comics seem like they're for kids. Elmer's an adult, so it's this weird thing where it's like...
Elmer is an adult, yes, but he was just dressed as a child, and he is, like, celebrating the arrival of the Easter Bunny, so he's kind of a man-child in this way.
That's true.
So.
Yeah. But I do like just Elmer going, "Yeah, and I'm gonna drown you, rabbit," which, that's kind of dark for him. You know? You're like, "Well, I'm gonna fucking drown him." Yeah. Fuck this. I try my best.
You know, whatever. The rhyme didn't work. How about drowning him?
I did. Okay, this is a moment that I do remember from this, where Bugs goes through this like log, and just we pan over, and it's a tunnel of love.
I bet you say that to all the weather.
I love that gag so much.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then we get to the magic gag, I believe, which...
Yes.
Which, first of all...
just destroys his wife.
No.
Yeah.
Bugs saying, "Oh, yeah, I know some magic tricks. I used to be in a magician's act," which is an underrated joke.
Yeah.
As a rabbit, he was in a magician's act. But I also like that as he tries to pull a rabbit out of a hat, it ends up being the Easter rabbit again, who reestablishes the stakes, and Bugs just pushes him back, going, "That's not the trick, Doc." Reminding us that, yes, the Easter rabbit was supposed to be in this cartoon, and that should be the plot. But I like, again, the deviations for the plot are the best part. I like the Bugs and Elmer stuff a lot. It's just like, you know, it's like, "Hey, haven't you given up some more eggs?" And so, this stuff's funny. But yeah,
I do love just okay. So now I don't know. Give me a watch. Keep the watch, okay? Okay, no, that's I learned this from a person of a different country.
I learned this from a Romani person
under a full moon. I'm gonna lose them, and it's good. And I love the animation on the eyes. And forget that.
I got another one. Now, what I will say. Is that once Bugs starts running again and keeps knocking on doors, even though yes, it's like, "Okay, you have to do some more eggs," and yada yada. And I like the little doors gag where every door he knocks on ends up being Elmer with a gun. And then the third door, you're expecting Elmer, and it's the dead end kid again, and you just hear him go, "Oh no!" I loved that.
Oh no.
That's a good bait and switch.
But, yeah.
But at least, you know, at least then he's able to use the dead end kid as a way of getting rid of Elmer.
Hey, you know, if during that door gag he opened it and then he saw Dick Tracy, wouldn't that be a good baity and switch?
Oh, leave!
All right.
Get out! Anyway, welcome to That's Not Quite All, folks, with just Jordan. Not Mark anymore, just Jordan. Anyway, So we do have Bugs getting rid of Elmer and the dead-end kid by painting Elmer's head like an Easter egg and then having the kid like hammer on it and as they run away. So that's at least they get them out of it. And then he...
But we still got the rabbit!
Yes, so he puts a bomb in an Easter egg and ignites it and flies him into a tree with a little exhausted little smile. And remember, keep smiling as the Easter Bunny said the whole time. Which is at least a good comeuppance for him and a good ending.
It is. It's a very good ending moment for Bugs.
Yeah. So, I don't like this one as much as everyone else does. I think it's too mean-spirited at times. I think making Bugs the victim for a lot of it dulls its comedic value, especially with the dead-end kid who isn't funny at all, other than when he's used against Elmer. I think it can be a bit too unfocused, as it starts out with this sort of Easter Bunny conceit, and it becomes a Bugs and Elmer cartoon midway through, which admittedly is the best stuff here, but, like, if you didn't have confidence in the Easter stuff, which, okay, maybe that's why this went out in fucking June, then you shouldn't have used it as the big wraparound, and you should have just made a Bugs and Elmer thing with the conceit of him being the Easter egg.
Well, if that's the case, they probably shouldn't have called it Easter yet.
Yeah!
I get it. It's a pun. Yeah. But if you weren't confident, you can reach it by April.
Mm.
So, I really do like Bugs cartoons. It gets joy out of other people's misery. Mel does a fantastic job here with the yelps and hollers, as well as that kid who, like it or not, is an iconic character. I do think it's rather interesting how this short kind of has two bad guys. I mean, the Easter Rabbit is too much of a wet blanket to really present as a main bad guy. I think that was it. It's just like, well, because the rabbit, he does one gag against Bugs. He pulls the rope as Bugs is running. And that was like his one villain gag. And it's kind of a whatever sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's a fun enough short to watch during Easter, even if it was released in June.
Yeah.
I mean, who does that?
It'd be like if we recorded these in May.
Right? It would make no sense.
And actually, it does make some sense. But no, it's a little different than that. But yeah, it'd be like if we put out a Christmas episode in March. Which we also kind of did with the Grinch one, but either way.
Yeah. It's fine, but yeah, definitely not a fantastic Bugs cartoon.
There are some parts of it that work, some great gags in the middle, but it's not really a favorite of mine. I think that's an opinion I'm allowed to have. I'm only giving it a 3 out of 5. I think it's fine. I think it does a lot right. It's just not
a favorite. Yeah, I'm giving it a 3.5 out of 5.
Which is fair. Which is very fair.
Bugs, I warn, is the hottest fragrance from termites. Lude your enemies with war.
From the makers of
Ted.
So, before we tell you what Bugs Bunny shorts we're covering next week, we first like to thank our fellow patrons over at patreon.com/TNQAF. We still like to thank Andrew, Triscrew, Samuel A.R. Adams, and James Irish. Thank you so much for your patronage, guys. Hope you enjoyed this June Bugs episode. I think for you guys, you get on May 31st. So,
enjoy that. Happy June!
Yeah, happy early June.
We're doing more Bugs ones next week. Which ones are next on the docket?
Well, you know, it's funny because in Easter Games, Bugs brought up being a magician's assistant because one of the shorts we're covering is it's one of Chuck Jones's one of his first Bugs Bunny outings. So the ones we're covering next week are Case of the Missing Hair,
beautiful
Rabbit Every Monday,
okay,
and The Unruly Hair. Now, Jordan, I want to further clarify. We're actually covering The Unruly Hair.
Yes. Finally. Because I don't know if you guys know the history of that. This, when we did our Frank Tashlin episode, we had... What's the Bugs one? Hair Remover, I believe.
Yeah.
We had Hair Remover. And Mark, in giving me my directions for this one... it was like, okay, I'll do, Porky Pig's Feet. I'll do Now That Summer Is Gone. And we both do The Unruly Hair. And I'm like, all right, cool. Got it. And he got the wrong one because on the note sheet, it was Hair Remover. So I watched Unruly Hair. And as we get on, we're like, so which one of us is wrong? And it was me. And so I had to go and... I think we had to record it the following week, and watch Unruly Hair, and it still worked out. I had to watch Hair Remover, and it still worked out. But
yeah,
all those times back in like the 20s or 30s or whatever, the 10s, like I watched Unruly Hair for nothing until now.
Yes, so that's what we're covering next week. So we got some. So we got some Tashlin, we got some Jones, and we got some mother. I don't know who did the other one.
Freeling. Makes sense. Because Rabbit Every Monday, I believe, is a Yosemite.
Okay, yeah, right. That's a good lineup. So stay tuned for that next week.
Yeah, so a little bit of everybody.
All right. So that's the end of this week's episode. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkHalem1995.
And you can follow me at Tall Guy Schmidt.
If you want to keep up with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow at @that_Looney.
Next week's episode.
You can follow us at @that_Looney on both Twitter and Instagram. Or type in the podcast title. We're the first result.
You can also follow our podcast wherever podcasts are readily available.
Yeah! Tony Bennett. Yeah, daddy.
That includes your Apple Podcasts, your Spotify Podcasts, your Google Podcasts, your Player FM, Anchor, Stitcher, Amazon Music. We're on YouTube. We're doing our YouTube Antimatics. That means we do some videos with clips from episodes that we've edited, and those come out every couple weeks. We also got a Patreon.
Oh, yes.
From anywhere from $1 to $5, you can give us a little bit of money.
Washington's, baby.
And contribute to the making of this podcast. And as a reward, you get to get some stuff like commentary.
Hear us chit-chat over movies.
Early access to episodes.
Sundays.
We also got live stream replays.
The replays of the live. Ooh.
And lots of other things you guys get to help out.
Get so shout out.
Go to patreon.com/TNQAF and get in on the phone.
Yeah. Okay, we'll lose our fucking minds. Alright, so until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan, and I'd like to thank the entire state of Alabama for listening to this one, and hopefully we didn't offend you too much. Good night.